You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the White Lotus podcast here on Post Show Recaps. I'm Ariel, and I'm very excited to be back this week of all weeks. No, we still didn't get a season two premiere date, but we did get some exciting awards. And to help me get into that, I am joined by my co-host. She is an HSP, a highly sensitive person. It is Dr. Amanda.
I'm a highly sensitive podcaster. Yes, I'm so excited to be here, Ariel. I just took a lavender bath, so I'm sort of bloated in my dress right now. I'm very excited to be here to talk about the White Lotus, which is like riding a huge high right now after a great Emmys night just last week. We're recording this on the 16th, September 16th, and on September 12th, of course, was the Emmys, and the White Lotus really just cleaned up the whole category of limited anthology series.
It's crazy. Definitely riding high, like straight out of a water bong. so yeah, we're really excited about the Emmy wins. And we felt like we needed, because of the Emmy wins, there's a lot of eyes on the show. We needed one of the heavy hitters to come on and help us along on our season one rewatch journey. We are joined by none other than Rob Cicernino. Hey, Rob, how's it going?
Hey, what's going on? Happy to be here. Little nervous. Just took a Klonopin, so hopefully that'll help. I'm worried about if I do another podcast. You know, as a survivor, I'm always worried about my threat level. Am I doing too many podcasts? Are people not going to let me do the podcast? Right. No. Like, let me do more podcasts, okay, people? Right. Like, let me stay on. Don't get rid of me.
We had to get Mike White's favorite person on the podcast
because I know that. So, Rob, would you say that you're a fan of Mike White?
Well, I am, of course. How could you not be a fan of the very talented Mike White? But I am a very big fan of The White Lotus. I was happy to see it recognized with so many awards this past week. And I really appreciate the two of you having me on to talk about an episode.
Yeah, this is great. This is the perfect time. White Lotus buzz is in the air. We're looking forward to season two. Like Ariel said, we still don't have the premiere date. We think it's probably going to come sometime later in October at this point, maybe after House of the Dragon is done. You know, we don't know anything. We don't have any insider information.
I reached out to Mr. HBO and I heard nothing back, so we shall see.
Yeah. I don't have Mike White's cell phone number, so I don't have any insider information there. Were you surprised, Rob, that Mike White mentioned Survivor in his Emmy's acceptance speech?
I really was. You know, I feel like that Mike White is like down bad for Survivor. Like, I feel like that the thing, and I guess that's like the thing that I probably never understood, and like the thing that I like always had wrong about Mike White is that I like my misunderstanding of Mike White fundamentally, I think, was always that, okay, Mike White is Jeff Probst's friend. He's just here as like Jeff Probst's buddy on Survivor. And like this, what, and again, maybe this comes from that I had not watched The Amazing Race. And so when like I sort of like, you know, talked about Mike White, I didn't think of him as somebody who was so serious about Survivor and how it was such an important experience for him. I had thought, like a lot of the other celebrities that have come, celebrity types that have come through Survivor, this was just like, if you talk to Lisa Welchel, like I'm sure she doesn't like talk about like what a, you know, Survivor is so important, or and you talk to Jeff Kent or like any of the athletes, it's not that big of a deal to them. But for Mike White, seemingly, this was a very important experience for him, that he still, like it talks about, still seems to love Survivor, you know, still, you know, talks about the show quite a bit. So I was, I was surprised again that here he is recognized probably in the most prestigious way that he probably has ever gotten recognition for what his like known craft is. And then was still talking about Survivor. I kind of felt like if I was Mike White, I was like, hey, I don't want people to really know about the Survivor thing. let's talk about like my career.
He said it on in David versus Goliath that like all of his peers are talking about these awards and you got recognized in this way, and that he just wants to win Survivor, that that's really the most important thing to him. So
yeah,
great night for him. But
to Rob's
still,
to Rob's point, we probably thought he was a little bit more of like a Jimmy Johnson, you know, like, hey, I'm going to go out and do something fun.
Well, to me, like, I feel like I have like the inverse career of, you know, like, I feel like the people want to think about Survivor. And I'm like, and I feel like that for most Survivor people, it's like, hey, let's not talk about Survivor. Let's talk about what else I've done. You know, when you talk to Colby, he's like, hey, Colby, what's about Survivor? He's like, no, let's talk about Red Eye. You know, let's talk about commercials. And so I think that for most of the other people from Survivor, it's almost like that they're annoyed. They don't want to talk about Survivor. Yeah, they want to talk about like anything else that they've done in their career.
Let's talk about my pornographic sock company.
Yeah, Mike White is like in a lot of ways the inverse of that.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. But I love the White Lotus so much, and I feel like that it was such an interesting, cool, fun show, which I'm sure that you two already know. But I just love how, like, I feel like it came along at a time when it was like just in the fact that I love sort of like the like 6-episode finite world that it inhabits, and I've never gone back to it before watching it. And I just really feel like that this is a show that feels more like a play. It's so different from everything else that we watch on television, which is, oh, this is 10 episodes, but this is just season one. And it's setting you up for a never ending 9-episode arc that or 9-season arc that maybe you'll never finish, that you'll wait a year in between each. Like, and when White Lotus comes back, it's like an anthology show of that. I presume it's going to be, you know, whether it's, I'm not sure if it's like the same hotel again or someplace, some other like resort in the world. But I just love that in the scope that it was, it went out and told a story and finished the story.
It's very British miniseries model, which I personally also really love. I think it took way too long for American television to catch up. But yes, we do know that season two takes place in Italy.
In Sicily, right?
So that's exciting. Mostly all new cast.
Mostly all new cast with one notable exception. So we said that White Lotus had a huge night at the Emmys. Let's talk a little bit about how huge that night was. It won the category for Outstanding Limited or Anthology Series. It won Best Supporting Actress for the one returning character, Jennifer Coolidge, who I'm sure we're all very excited to talk about her. She was who I was paying homage to with my lavender bath in my introduction. For Best Supporting Actor, Murray Bartlett in the role of Armand, very deserving. And then Mike White picking up 2 Emmys for Outstanding Director and Outstanding Writing. So really, really, really huge night. We're going to be talking more about, you know, we're still on our road covering season one and the lead up to season two. You're going to want to follow everything that we're doing. So be sure to subscribe to our White Lotus podcast feed, which is
brand new
just for you, just for our VIPs. We're comping you this postshowrecaps.com/White Lotus.
Yes, that's for all your RSS podcatcher needs. That's super exciting. And Yeah, so for any new listeners, we're just very quickly going through season one, episode by episode, and then we'll do the same thing for season two. So if you're here, make sure that you've watched episode two of season one, mm-hmm. or you don't care about being spoiled, which is totally fine.
We're just doing episode by episode.
Yeah, we're doing spoilers for this episode, but we're not spoiling.
We're spoiling the podcast we're talking about,
exactly.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is full spoilers of the episode of the podcast that we're talking about.
So like I'm on the record for saying, if you're the type of podcast mm-hmm. listener who watches 5 minutes of the show and then goes to 5 minutes of the podcast, you might be in trouble.
That's true. Right. Because we don't keep track of it like that. It's not like
that's not how we do
but
it.
But we
here.
Did pitch that as like a good idea for like a micropod.
Josh and I are working.
I heard
it
about the micropod. Yeah. So I do wonder, maybe it's like, hey, let's watch 5 minutes of maybe this is like a Renap.
This does sound like a Renap.
Watch 5 minutes of a movie and then we'll talk about it. And then we'll watch. Mm-hmm. We did it with a CSI episode of like, we didn't ask anybody to watch along with us, but we did like do like at every commercial break, we recorded more to see if we could figure out who the killer was going to be. And I think it was Meghan Markle was in that episode. of CSI New York, I think it was. Yes.
Rob, do you think more PSR shows should use that model of like watching 5 minute chunks and recapping?
No, because I think almost no PSR shows cover TV shows that have commercials. Maybe with Better Call Saul ending. I think that might be it.
Okay.
We're so exclusive.
We're very highbrow over here.
Very, very highbrow. I think that maybe the Abbott Elementary pod might be the only flag bearer for commercial television.
Right. Color guard, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into episode 102, which is called fittingly A New Day. And Ariel, I didn't realize that until doing this rewatch that I think each episode is one day at the resort.
I feel so much less stupid because I had the same reaction. I was like, what? Oh, this is so great. Look, the sun's coming up. I get it. It's so easy to understand. It's a new day. The title helps. It's great. It makes it easy to understand. And ostensibly, like what we got in the first episode was a, whether you want to call it a 1 week flash forward or the whole show really being like a 1 week flashback, seemingly by the end, you know, we've seen it, but famously, I do not remember a lot of what happened at the end. I don't remember exactly who's in the casket. So yeah, it's exciting and it makes sense that each episode will be a day because it's super dense and it's a lot of characters. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I do feel like that, you know, not to say like that this is like an completely like, you know, like a reality TV show, but I do feel like that in the same sort of like, you know, storytelling style of like, you know, day one, day two, you know, you have this you know, rich cast of characters that you're following, like this big ensemble around. Like, I do think that there are some things that are, you know, somewhat similar to like a season of Survivor.
Yeah. And I think that is, you know, by design. You know, I think that Mike White was somewhat inspired by his experiences both on The Amazing Race and on Survivor. Mm. And the episodes too kind of have that like cycle structure where we always end at the dinner, right? Which is sort of like the, you know, the big event kind of tribal council set piece. And we go through the events leading up to it.
Another 7 days.
Another
17
big
17 casket. One casket.
There you go. So I thought that we could start here following the Mosbacher family because we really were left on the cliffhanger at the end of episode one about what was going to be the result that the doctor calls to give to Mark. Rob, how do you have any kind of overall gestalt thoughts about the Mosbacher family?
I think it's like any health scares that you're waiting, any test results pending.
Yeah, before we got started, Rob told us
have
he was
a lipid
waiting.
Panel out. Yeah.
He was waiting on a call from his doctor's office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tomorrow is now, Rob. Don't forget that.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. In regards to the family, you know, I love all of these characters so much. It was so much fun to see where it was going. My one big note after watching this back with like there's so much turmoil over the sleeping arrangements in the hotel room. Where Mark and Nicole obviously like so they have a bedroom, but the girls are sleeping on the couch. Then also Dylan, is that the son? Dylan?
Quinn.
Sorry, my bad. I'm so bad with character names on all of these shows.
Yeah.
But Quinn, like, he's sleeping on, like, you know, in like a closet or in like the kitchen.
Yeah.
Now they make so much about how Connie Britton's character makes so much money that that how did they end up in this one bedroom suite at the White Lotus? Like, it makes no sense.
It's crazy that I completely agree. And it's crazy that a person like Nicole, who's all about problem solving and is all about, like, making, she's like the ultimate mom in ways both good and bad and terrible and wonderful. I think Dr. Mann, you called her toxically positive. It just doesn't make sense. And even here, I guess to that point, you know, somebody in the writer's room were like, wouldn't you just get another room? And one of the, I don't know if it's the daughter or the friend that's like, shouldn't we just get him his own room? She's like, don't be silly. I'm like, but no, that sounds like a plausible solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, or like, maybe it's like, oh, they only had one bedroom suites. Because I said this to Nicole this morning. I'm like, Nicole, look, why do they only have one room? She's like, no, that they put them in the wrong room. I'm like, that wasn't them.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, we know that they're very booked. They have this extensive cleaning policy. It's not so easy to grab another room.
But I get the sense the White Lotus is not the, like, ultimate five-star resort. Like, I feel like this is kind of, it's kind of like a four-star resort.
This is a hot take, Rob.
Is it? Because I feel like that it's not like that this is the nicest place. It's not the pineapple suite. Like, I get the sense that there is, like, I think it's sort of like right on the cusp, but I feel like that there must be nicer resorts in Hawaii. And so the fact that they're even here, that they are, I mean, does Armand seem to you like he's running like the top resort all of Hawaii?
I mean, Armand is definitely unraveling. I wonder if, you know, this isn't Armand at his best that we're seeing, but this is interesting. And I hadn't thought about that because I was thinking that with Nicole Mosbacher being this, you know, high profile CFO that has, like, you know, clickbait pieces written about her, obviously is kind of recognizable to the public, and thinking, Tanya, we don't know where her money comes from, but she seems to have plenty of it. Like, I was imagining that this was really, really top level place, but that's an interesting point you raise, Rob, that maybe I'll be looking out for more signs that this is, they're really slumming it. Slumming it at the White Lotus. Yeah.
We'll have to compare the Sicilian version
This was like a points or miles situation. Oh. Why they ended up at the White Lotus.
I was wondering if this was something like, so thinking about this, you know, Rob, you have kids and so do I. And it's like, I wonder if there's this point where your kids are teenagers and becoming adults and you don't really realize how much of their own people they are. And I wonder if when they're planning this vacation, they're thinking it'll be great. We'll all be together and we'll share a room and, like, we'll spend so much time together and, like, oh, you know, Olivia can bring a friend and we'll do all these things.
Sounds horrible.
And then when they show up, they realize, oh, you know, my kids are really these young adults that don't want to spend time with their parents anymore. Like, I wonder if this was like Mark and Nicole not really adjusting to the right headspace.
Or, you know, I think we've also, like, been in the headspace of, like, we're barely even going to be in the room.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. That's
we're going to be doing stuff.
Another thing I thought of, and then we can move on. But another thing I thought of was, to that point, that it's like the suite wing of the hotel, perhaps there is no, like, single room for him to have that's right next door and they wouldn't trust him to be far away. And then the other thing too, I think, is the show is getting into this subtle thing with both perhaps them here and terrible, terrible Shane, who we will get to, of, like, rich people being cheap about, like, very specific things and, like, picking and choosing when to, like, splurge and not care about money. But then, oh no, here I'm not going to get him an extra room because we want to save the money, even though we don't need to, or, you know, the pineapple suite thing. So there could be something to that.
So one of the Mosbacher family scenes that sort of really resonated with me, you know, so Rob, you talk about Nicole, like, discovers that Quinn is, you know, completely stripped naked, kind of sleeping on the floor of this kitchen because there's no space for him to sleep. And it's really hot in this small sort of closet. She's going to come in and it, like, you know, like, your brother is stroking out Olivia. And she's, you know, fretting about all of this. She's trying to get everybody ready to go and get breakfast. And like, I love this sort of sense of, like, you know, these kids are like, Mom, like, this is vacation. It's not supposed to be stressful. It's a breakfast buffet in Hawaii. And she's really trying to sort of cruise direct this whole situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they just got the news that Mark doesn't have cancer. So that was a huge deal. This actually, yeah, right. That part actually happened the night before when they were doing their drug ASMR session.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to get back to that.
Okay.
But he doesn't have cancer, so they're all celebrating. And then, as usual, Mark is just focused on him. Like, last episode, he was so stuck on, okay, I'm dying, I want to you know, bond with my son, which is very sweet, but he made it about him. And then now here, he's like, yes, I don't have cancer, this is amazing, I have a new lease on life, I'm making it about me again, come on, let's do stuff.
Well, I think one of the things about this, and, you know, sort of like in, like, an overall theme of the series, I think as somebody who has been through the process of Survivor, that I think that this is something that Mike White, I'm not sure if I read this in interviews, but also, like, when you go through Survivor or an experience like that, and I'm sure there's, like, a million other things that you could compare it to, of that you get deprived of everything. And when you come back from Survivor, you really feel like, wow, oh my God, cold water. I appreciate this so much. I appreciate everything. I'm never going to not look at my refrigerator and be so thankful of what I have so much gratitude for. Every day is a gift. I have plumbing. I am so appreciative, and I'm going to hold this with me. And you see this, like, a lot of times, like the day 39, or when they used to be the 39 days, but people, like, talk about that. Like, this has changed me forever. I am never going to ever waste another day of my life because I have this blessing. And I think there are so many people in this story that are trying to capture that, you know, you see it so much with other characters later on in the show. And I think that, you know, Mike White has talked about how that, you know, he has, like, tried to recapture that feeling. And you have it with Mark with his health scare of that. Okay. All right. Now I have to make the most of every single day. I've been given this second chance. And I just think that, like, thematically, it's so interesting because you can try to live life that way, but I think it's almost impossible to hold that feeling for a great length of time. And then when it dissipates, it's like, I wish I still could have that feeling of, you know, gratitude that is gone now. And how do I get that back?
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, Rob. And you definitely have hear Mike White in his interview sort of talk about that theme. And you can see that through line in his work if you go back to Enlightened at all. And it's not just, you know, for Mark, it's his health scare. It's also seeking these experiences on vacation. I think it's also seeking, you know, other forms of spirituality, that Mike White is really interested in characters on that journey. And I think it's a really fascinating theme. And I really like the way that he kind of regards it. I feel like these characters come across as being relatable and, like, having this genuine need, but he also at the same time sort of recognizes how fleeting and cheap those moments can be. Like, I feel like he manages to portray both of those things, both that, like, he has respect for seeking that out, but also he recognizes that a lot of times it ultimately is fleeting, and a lot of the ways that we try to find that might ultimately be sort of cheap, or might be using, like, you know, this kind of exploitative thing that we see in, like, the Tanya and Belinda relationship. So I feel like he kind of captures all of that complexity, and like the tone can be both serious and very funny.
Yeah, it sucks sometimes to be human. It's great and it's amazing, and then you hate your brain for not remembering to be grateful or not remembering to not do this or do that. It's wonderful.
So we're all very happy about Mark. This is very much a new day for him, waking up this morning after getting this great news. He's going to be, you know, enjoying his family, looking lovingly at Olivia, but he's going to then this is going to get interrupted by noticing Olivia and Paula have actually, they have a big bag of goodies with them, and this is going to become a major plot point.
They know how to party.
They know how to party.
Yes.
This is so funny. At first, like, Olivia's sort of, bummed out. I wish we had drugs. But it turns out that, I threw in this weed last minute. And then I also have my Klonopin and I have this Adderall. Oh, and if that's too much, then we could take an Ambien. And I also brought ketamine.
This was so wild, again, in the real time, and then go back and watch it. It's like, I wish we had drugs. And then Paul says, well, I do have some weed. And it's like, we don't have anything to smoke. And I forgot. Like, I packed this glass water bong. What?
In her regular bag, not even like padded. You have keys in there. You have sharp things. This is glass. It is
glass. Glass. How did it not break?
It is hilarious because they are so pretentious right before that, reading their one of them is reading Nietzsche.
Yeah.
One of them is reading Sigmund Freud, and Dr. Sigmund Freud. And then they're like,
my friend. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Friend to Dr. Armanda. Like, and then they have all these drugs. Like, it's so funny. The reveal of like, they even don't even know. It's crazy.
Did they even put water into the bong?
I said that. Okay. First of all, they didn't. College Ariel has notes. Like, first of all, that is not how you do a shotgun.
And Mike White on the phone. Yeah.
That's not how you do a shotgun. And also, it's fine if they cut away and whatever, they went to get water, but there was no water in that water.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the bag. And if it had spilled in the bag, it would have been awful.
Yeah, well, you can only get 3 ounces, right, on the plane. They're like, wait, how many ounces of water in this water?
This is the tiniest little water bottle I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. So they have their party bag, and then they do ASMR. And I know is this what the kids are doing nowadays, Ariel?
I
think you're the youngest. You're the youngest person on the podcast. Is this like how is this how the kids are having a good time?
This is my nightmare. Like, I don't have children, but Sydney Sweeney channeling her best euphoria here, like all the drugs, and I'm just like, please stop. When she pulled out the ketamine, I was like, no, not the ketamine. Like, it's getting worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. I guess if you're high, it sounds good. I've never, I similar to you, Dr. Amanda, I know what ASMR is. I certainly recognize that some things are pleasant to listen to, but if somebody was like right next to me and putting something up against my ear, I don't think I would like that.
When Mark finds all of this the next morning, he asks appropriately, are you opening a Mexican pharmacy? And Quinn is going to accuse them of partying all night and making lesbian noises.
It's just line after line of not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the writing and the dialogue is like, so like, people say horrible things to each other on this show, but everything is like such an interesting line and delivery, and there's just there's so much of that in this show. Like, I'm really interested to know, and I don't know if either of you know, was this something like, did Mike White have this in a drawer for years, and then like the pandemic happened and he's like, hey, I can go film this, like, give me, or did he write this all over COVID?
So from what I understand, like, he has wanted to do a destination vacation show like this, I think, since his time on The Amazing Race. But I don't think that he had the impression that I've gotten from his interviews isn't that he had this written. I think that, and we talked about this a little bit, I think, in our kickoff pod, Ariel, about how like this was just, COVID became this opportunity when there were not a lot of shows that you could make. And this happened to be a show that, with a limited cast, filming in Hawaii, mostly outdoors, like, was a feasible show to make. So it really was like just the perfect opportunity for this to get made.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. A lot of writers do that. You know, one of my favorite, back when I used to read, one of my favorite books, The Great Gatsby, like F. Scott Fitzgerald, like famously had, he had written short stories with like pieces of characters before and then kind of recycled some of those pieces into ultimately The Great Gatsby. It makes sense that you would have other pieces in your brain of things and would like introduce them here. But to your point, Rob, absolutely. Like the writing is razor sharp. Like each character is fleshed out so completely mm-hmm. and effectively. And you really get a sense that these are real people, like with their own flawed, sometimes very inappropriate, but very real world reactions to things and horrible sometimes things that they say.
Another great moment with Olivia and the drugs is when Nicole sort of smells them lighting up the night before. She says, "No, Mom, we're doing witchcraft."
Tribute to Hecate.
Fine line.
Yeah, yeah.
And she just believes it. Like, cool, yeah. Cool.
I'm going to remember that when I smell mm-hmm. something in my kids' room. Is that witchcraft up mm-hmm. there? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Mark has this new lease on life. He really wants to spend time with his poor son, Quinn. And Quinn just wants to play his Nintendo Switch at the poolside bar and eat some nachos.
Rob, do you ever say this to your kids? Like, come on, let's bro out. We got to do stuff.
I don't think I've ever used the phrase bro out. Mm-hmm. But I have found, and Amanda, I don't know if you can relate to this. I find there is nothing more frustrating in the world to me that when my child is attempting to multitask of like that they are doing something involving screen time mm-hmm. and then also attempting to have a conversation with me. I'm like, hey, come on. Like, and they're like, Dad, I'm listening. I'm like, it's infuriating.
I mean, I'm sure that we do the same thing to them sometimes, right? Ooh. Like, I bet that, like, I don't know. Yeah, sometimes my kids will call me out. But we know when my kids are watching a screen, they are totally in a trance. Like, the other day I was trying to play Catan Jr. with one of my sons.
Oh, how is that? Good?
It's good. It's good. Yeah. While the TV was on and he was like, no, I'm playing. And I was like, no, you're facing the opposite direction, yeah. Completely locked into the show.
I have had that where, you know, I taught my son how to play chess during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so that we would play chess and I'm like, you know, I let him win. And but then when he starts like he's like multitasking and like not really, I get furious. And then I beat him because it's like, oh, maybe yeah. If you were paying attention,
you didn't see that.
So you gotta try to learn some lessons.
Teachable
mm-hmm. moments. Yeah. If you don't pay attention, you lose.
Yes, you will get beat, but not in the bad way, in the way that you will lose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Mark is really trying to connect with Quinn and a lot of stuff. He's talking about his own, you know, like, so he's had this health scare. It made him think about his own father's death. He's mm-hmm. going to, you know, talk about this to your point, Rob, like while Quinn is just playing his Nintendo Switch, he's like, one of the great sadnesses of my life is that you and he didn't get to meet. Like, Quinn is not at all paying attention mm-hmm. to this conversation.
He's like, yeah, can I save the level that I'm on, please?
He's like, if I don't save the game now, I lose my score. Mm-hmm. But you know, Mark obviously has this memory of his dad as being this real tough kind of alpha guy, but he was a good man, and he wants Quinn to sort of see that in him, and they should do more things together. So they signed up to get certified in scuba.
No, that's gonna suck, is basically Quinn's reaction.
But he agrees reluctantly.
Just like always, like in the last episode, he was in the room and his dad was like, come on, let's go outside. And Quinn, even though, yes, again, reluctantly, he agreed to do it. So I love that Quinn is like actually a sweet person that wants to, like, his father's idiosyncrasies aside, he's happy to spend time with his dad, even though he would probably rather be on his Switch, but he obliges and he's a sweet, it's nice to see him in contrast to the quote-unquote mean girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, what's the move here? Like, what would be a better way for Mark, like, to... Because I feel like Mark is a little bit wrong-headed in trying to connect to Quinn. Like, if you bring your 17-year-old son on vacation? Like, do you just let him play his Nintendo Switch in the room? Do you try to dress? Like, what's the right way to do this?
I mean, I think just like from my own experience, like I feel like there's so much of like, hey, let's bond here. Come do what I like with me. Come here. Let's watch E.T., you know, let's do something that's important to me together. Whereas I do feel like that as a parent, I think we should probably try harder to like, okay, what is something that you like to do? Hey, can I get in on this video game? Can you bring me into a little bit more of what you like to do and bring me into that experience and let me meet you in your world? And I feel like that, you know, Mark, this is important to Mark. He wants Quinn to do it with him because he wants to spend the time with him, but probably, you know, better ways to do it. But, you know, that's often like not the direction we go.
Yeah.
And even the way he's like, you know, when I was your age, my father died, which is in and of itself, like obviously a tragic thing and obviously sweet that he wants to share that with his son. But as like to the point that we're all making kind of about Mark, he makes it about him and he's like, isn't that sad? Wouldn't it be sad if I died? Let's do something. Like, that's not really.
Yeah, it's very much about Mark. So now we know that the scuba certification is like 3 days in the pool for several hours. I think that was what Armand told them last time. So, so that's the plan. We're going to go over to the beach where Olivia and Paula are ready to snort Special K and go into a Hawaiian K-hole.
Not the cereal.
You probably also shouldn't snort that.
That's true. Do they have that at the breakfast buffet?
Oh, do they have Special K?
In the tiny boxes, yeah.
Right, and all you need is to like crush it with your glass water bong.
I'll go back and watch the breakfast buffet scene because that is usually what separates the 4-star resort from the 5-star resort, Rob.
I did spot tater tots at breakfast. So
you saw tater? Is that a
that
good sign?
That screams 5 stars to me. Yeah, I mean, 3 stars that they're tater tots, but the fry quality, it was 5 stars.
I don't know about you. I always find breakfast buffet very unsatisfying.
They can be very disappointing. Like, the whole tray of the scrambled eggs is gross.
I was just about to say, unless you have an omelet station for me,
it should just be an omelet station.
Right. With all the fixins after it. I agree, Dr. Mann. I don't think that I have ever, I've probably had it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I have never enjoyed the disgusting pre-made, probably out of a box platter of eggs.
Yeah, that, you know, I find the buffet like I really just don't like the whole concept. I feel like because I'm a very like it upsets me about like wasting food. Also, I'm like, nobody's eating all this. They're throwing it out. This is who is this for? Yeah. Like, why they make so much of this? But like an omelet station, and you know, if you ever have a pancake station, that's also nice.
Or the waffle. That's not.
But you know, just have that ready to go, and then you didn't use it, make it tomorrow.
True. And then there's always like those underripe melons too.
Is this honeydew or is this onion?
Like, that's how it's like so hard. It's so hard to eat.
Onions.
Please.
Yeah.
Don't have people eat onions.
I know. Even
television.
I heard about that.
Rough week for onions. But this is a different kind of Special K. This isn't in the mini cereal boxes. And this scene is so funny. So the girls are like having their Hawaiian K-hole moment. And then we have like at the very, very worst time, Tanya, like a total monster, is just going to approach them and start like admiring their skin and talking about how beautiful they are. And she's just
going to look so young.
Wow.
I've never seen you up close like this.
I can't imagine. I feel like in some ways the K probably helped. Like, there's almost like something that she would have been more intense had they not been high. I don't know.
But
I think her monster comment is well earned.
Yeah. It's one of those situations where you're like, is this a really weird thing that's happening to me or am I on drugs? Right? Because it's the answer to this is both.
Sometimes the answer is both.
And it's shot like in such a like close up, like Jennifer Coolidge is right in your face.
And it's slow motion.
When she's talking about her mother's ashes, and then she'd be like, "Well, if I release them here near the shore, then they'll get back, and that would be like littering."
It's like littering. It's a really good slow motion Jennifer Coolidge, Ariel. Thank you, thank I was impressed. You. Yeah, Tanya has no boundaries. Like, she's ready to just launch into this story about her mother with really anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen it before, and I have a feeling we'll see it again.
But you know, so the girls sort of panic. They say they say that they have to go. They have to pee really badly. This killed me when Tanya says, "Well, I have to pee too, but I'm holding it."
Yeah.
So honest.
Mm-hmm.
And also, why? You just came from inside. Like, what happened?
And they're going to run off so quickly that they leave their backpack of drugs. Chekhov's backpack of drugs.
Chekhov, famous multi-drug user.
Polysubstance abuser.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
So the Mosbacher's story always, you know, we always end up at the resort dinner. You know, we have one of these great dinner scenes. We're going to, you know, find out that Paula's lost the backpack on the beach. When they go back to find it, it's not there. And she had, that's a big problem because she had some crucial shit in there.
Crucial shit indeed. Crucial to them, because by the way,
yeah, they're all of my thoughts.
I do. I do think it's interesting that to track, like, and it's very teenager, right? Of like, clearly, so here, Olivia is going to go to talk to Dr. Armand.
Dr. Armand. Yes.
Now I can't get rid of it. Talk to Armand to try to find out if he has the bag, if somebody turned it in. Then she spots Paula having a conversation with the waiter busboy that we saw in the first episode that she showed interest in. And we can tell that, like, there's something here with the, especially with the Olivia side. Like, she at the very beginning of the episode before the drug reveal was all, "Are you worried this is boring?" Like, she's so concerned with Paula having a good time. And then now she's having an adverse reaction to Paula potentially being interested in this person.
Yeah, we're seeing like the beginning of Olivia's sort of possessiveness about her friend here, I think. So, you know, this is, there's going to be like these, you know, there's this conversation later that that we'll talk about with Nicole and Rachel, where they talk about, you know, somebody having a strong orbit. I think that Olivia is one of these people. She likes to be at the center of the solar system. She wants to be pulling everyone in. And the fact that her friend could be having an experience interested in somebody else is threatening to her.
If there's anything we know about Sydney Sweeney on television, is that she doesn't like it if their friends have relationships.
I'm fine.
God.
Yeah. I want to see her character on Euphoria meet her character on.
Would they get along? Yeah.
No, I don't know because like I saw this for I didn't see the first season of Euphoria until after I watched this, but that I really feel like that it's interesting that her character here and they're probably like about the same age, but her character in this show seems like so much more of like a child. Like I know she's probably still playing like 16, 17 here, but I feel like it reads ultimately like more like, you know, like 14.
Well, I think she's supposed to be in college here. Paula is her college friend. So I think we're talking about like 18, 19 really for her.
She seems so much younger here in this than she does on Euphoria. Like she feels like much more like a child, even though she's doing hard drugs.
Yeah,
she seems like more of a kid.
Yes. To that point, I think they definitely in the way that Hollywood, they always either need to age up or age down, like physically people, the big glasses, the like hair in front of her face. There's something very innocent about it. Definitely like way more innocent, certainly than she dresses on Euphoria.
I haven't seen Euphoria, but like, I wonder if there's something about like, in this show, she's very much in the family context with her parents. And so like, that's a dynamic maybe that like makes her seem, younger, but I think that she's really, really great in this character here.
Yes.
as Olivia. I really enjoy her performance. And like we see like she's complicated her relationship with Paula. It's like she sort of has, like we've talked about it, this like maybe class dynamic here where she invites her friend on this fancy vacation and her friend is obviously like very grateful for that, but also there's a way that she seems to be trying to impress Paula and really wants Paula's approval. So there's like this interesting dynamic between the two of them there. I love Olivia with her mom here. We talk about the father-son stuff with Quinn, but the mother-daughter stuff with Olivia and Nicole at dinner
is
so funny. You know, Olivia's going to, or Nicole's going to point out that Rachel recognized her and is a fan. And Olivia looks for the opportunity to sort of like, to knock her down and says like, you know, accomplishing things is just a compulsion. It staves off feelings of emptiness or whatever. The real question is, what are you getting done? Putin is an overachiever. He's impressive, also evil.
And then Mark, very sweetly, says, Olivia, your mother is not Putin. which is a fact.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of damning with faint praise, right? It's a low bar.
And the best part is Nicole turns to him and it's like, thank you, sweetie.
Maybe, you know, in 2022, maybe that Mark would have pushed back even harder on the comparison.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So Olivia's going to, you know, go off to try to find this, you know, this bag of crucial shit because, you know, Paula has all of her thoughts in there. It's very important. You mentioned, Ariel, this is when she spies Paula with the waiter. And like when she comes back to the table, we have, you know, this is Mark's toast, which is where we're going to get the title of this episode from. And he's talking about, you know, this has been a reminder to him to look at things in a new way. And if you do, every day can be a new day. And if it is, it's like you're always being born into life, like all the time, not stuck decaying and dying.
Mark cannot let anything go, one, which is hilarious. And two, I do think it's interesting. I noticed here only because we're binging it and watching it so closely back to back. This was super reminiscent of episode one when Belinda is giving the massage to Tanya and she's telling her like every day is a new day and I'm being reborn.
I am my own vaginal father.
Yes, that old thing.
My own phallic mother. This is Belinda's kind of mantra here about you're always being born into life. And like, I think that Rob, this is like that feeling that you talked about that Mike White seems to be really interested in exploring. Like when you get back from Survivor, from having one of these experiences, it's like everything feels new again and you have this appreciation.
Well, I think it also ties into a lot of the themes of like privilege in the show where it's like, I think that, you know, there is this thought of like, I have so much. Like, okay, well, I have so much. Like, why am I not happy? Like, why, mm-hmm. How could I have so much, and still feel empty? Right. And how do I like find a way to sort of like, okay, well, maybe if I like sort of like frame things this way, then maybe then I can like appreciate the things that I have. But unfortunately, like it's a very hard thing to, to reset to constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just not, it's not easy to live there, as you said, every day. And clearly this is new to Mark, only because of what happened to him.
Yeah. Yeah. This. And he says in this like little toast earlier, like, if you really think about it, we have no problems. We have everything we could possibly need. And yet, like, it's just the human experience to still be dissatisfied and have pain, even when our like objective realities are so good. Really interesting, I think. And this again is like where I feel like Mike White can both be like sympathetic to where this character is, but also sort of portray what is, what is kind of humorous about Mark as a character and what might be misguided about some of the things that he's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Later in the Mossberger's room, we are going to, there's sort of these the two pieces here. So Nicole is going to kind of put her foot down and tell the girls, like, Quinn is going to sleep out here. We're not going to make him be sweaty and naked and suffocating on the floor of a closet. We're letting him sleep in the common room, and you girls be nice.
Yeah, I can only imagine how that kitchen was smelling. I'm sorry. I just had to say it. It's like he said there's no air in the room, and I'm like, please, God, get me out of here. But yes, she's, I wonder, what is this good for her feng shui? She's so like, oh, about, yeah, that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're introducing a new bed into the room.
And like the second Nicole leaves, all Olivia and Paula have to do is just stare at Quinn and say, we don't want you here.
Mm-hmm.
This is so cruel. I don't like them. Like for last episode, I complained about them being mean girls and it not being as funny. I love the stuff when their comedy isn't on anyone else, like, or the joke isn't on anywhere else. They're just talking about drugs or they're just talking about whatever. Mm-hmm. And then here to be, I think it's because I'm the younger brother. So I know, I mean, I did have to work hard. I will just share this very quickly. Like my brother would always get mad at me because I found a way to like get myself in with his friends in a way that made it hard. Even if he wanted to exclude me, it would be harder because they were-
is that where Quinn is going wrong? He should be forming an alliance with Paula and they kick Olivia out to the beach.
That's true. Mm-hmm. She could be stuck in the middle, and then like the original Lucina, she gets voted out.
Oh, too soon. Yeah, so Quinn just like storms out and goes to sleep on the beach. Do you think that's the best move for Quinn, Rob? Is this
No. That I mean,
as the one person who has slept on the beach, a tropical.
It looks like was too close to the water.
Think so. I think it might have been too close. It might have been too close to the water. I feel like, and he like the thing that bothers me. He's got like the huge like big down comforter. Yeah, no wonder you're stroking out. You're like that. That's too heavy. All you needed was a sheet in that room.
Where's the top sheet?
Yeah,
oh, millennials and
not for anything.
Yeah.
Like, look, I don't have a black light or anything, but like, you don't want to be wrapping yourself in these hotel like down comforters.
It's a really good point.
Always take that top, like the stoop. I don't even know what to call it. Like the cover that's on top of the comforter, like that's just on like the last third of the bed towards the feet, immediately comes off the second we walk in. Immediately, I don't even care. It's staying in the corner the entire trip.
Yeah. So,
well,
yeah,
the White Lotus has a 1 day cleaning policy. So everything gets very thoroughly laundered at the White Lotus.
Yeah. It seemed the policy seemed very like COVID friendly, or
you can't get around that policy. It's like written in stone, apparently. Yeah. So Quinn goes out and sleeps on the beach. And the girls are just like, wow, that was easy. But, you know, this is actually going to seem to be like a meaningful experience for Quinn. Like after being, you know, sort of stuck in his Nintendo Switch all this time, he goes out to the beach. You know, he brings his devices with him, but we see him like when he sits on the ocean, just seeming to have this really authentic, genuine experience watching the ocean, seeing whales like leaping through the waves. He's going to kind of look out with this, like, you know, with the smile on his face. So maybe Quinn needs to go on Survivor.
Well, in a lot of the interviews that Mike White did, like right after the season, like I think that he sees Quinn as like the avatar for himself. I think this part's of different characters. Like I think he talks about Armand also being an avatar for himself in the way that, you know, in like writing scripts and doing things in Hollywood that like, okay, he's sort of this person who is like, oh, okay, you need this done. Let me change this for you. But also I think he talks about like his experience with Survivor and then also like Quinn being that character who's also like having this time in the outdoors and it's sort of being sort of like a really important experience in his life.
And I think it's really sweet that in the first episode his dad's like, Quinn, meet nature, nature meet Quinn, when they're standing on the balcony, and here he has like his own authentic, not forced by his dad, moment where he's meeting nature and it like genuinely affects him, and I love it. It was a really sweet moment for him.
Yeah, it's nice that he kind of finds it on his own terms for himself. So that was a really effective moment. Back in Nicole and Mark's room, Mark's going to get a call from his uncle Charlie, and he had called his uncle, remember, to find out about the details of his father's health so he could sort of understand what might be happening to him. And he's going to get this bombshell that his dad did not die of cancer as he had previously thought. He actually died from AIDS. And Charlie's going to tell him that his father had two lives and he had this sort of secret life where he lived as a gay man in addition to being home with his family. And this is something that Mark obviously had no idea about.
Yeah, it's just yet another bombshell for Mark. He's Mark, going through
he's
a lot
going
these
through
days.
A lot.
And I think it's hilarious that Nicole, who is the like queen of being positive and just kind of like being calm and keeping control of the situation, has one of the funnier, besides Tanya, of course, famous gifts from this season where mouth just drops open. And she's like, what? It's really funny.
So this is a lot. This is a lot for Mark. He's been like building up his dad as this really macho guy who was kind of this paragon of masculinity to him. So this is a new thing that he needs to assimilate here. He's really going through quite a bit. I think that I'm ready to leave the Mosbacher plot and go to talk about Shane and Rachel. And the big thing that is happening with Shane and Rachel on this day is Rachel's gotten an offer to write a piece. So she's a freelance journalist and she is going to have this opportunity to write a piece on her honeymoon. And Shane is not happy about this.
No.
Yeah. I really could see both sides of this discussion between Shane and Rachel, because I feel like, okay, while Rachel certainly, you know, okay, this is like, she doesn't want to throw her career away. Like, I do feel like, okay, I mean, this is their honeymoon and this is really supposed to be, you know, we've carved out this time to spend together. You know, everybody like goes on vacation with like certain ideas of like what the idealized version of the trip is supposed to be. I know myself personally, like I have found many times that the actual vacation is does not often live up to what that's supposed to be. And then to, you know, okay, I'm actually going to be in the room working on this article, you know, does not seem like you know, that Shane already has a lot of disappointment about the room. So you know, you totally understand where the conflict comes from.
And to that point, I don't think that she, you know, we'll get to her asserting herself a little bit more when she has a conversation with Nicole. But it's so clear to me that she's trying to be defiant here, whether she realizes it consciously or not. She is trying to push back on Shane a little bit. And she knows that he's going to be upset. I agree with you, Rob, that in general, her doing it isn't the right call. Mm-hmm. But him, of as she probably predicts, his reaction in that sense, maybe it's a test. His reaction in and of itself isn't inappropriate. It is the way he goes about it as usual and like how gross and disgusting.
He is. There's probably a way that Shane could say like, oh, like, babe, I see that this is a great opportunity for you. Like, it really is important for you to get back into the writing. I appreciate that you put this on hold while we were planning the wedding. But it would be important to me for us to, like, really just spend time to get. Like, there's a, probably a right way to say this instead of saying your career is kind of bullshit and I'll pay you twice as much as this. Like, you know, you like you don't even make any money anyway. Like, it's like the way he goes about it is just could not be more wrong.
So I've loved this series, you know, the whole time through. It's so much fun to go back to. I think that maybe one of my biggest complaints about the series, if I may make one, and I am a fan, is that I almost feel like that they didn't do enough to even make us understand why Shane and Rachel got together. You get understand it from Shane's perspective, certainly. Mm-hmm. But
my wife is so hot.
Well, other than Rachel, like some throwaway lines to, my family never really had any stability or money. You know, they don't do enough to make Shane, you know, charming enough where you would have to imagine Rachel probably had a lot of suitors. The fact that she ends up with this guy, and this is the honeymoon. And really, like, even at the honeymoon, she, like, does not seem so interested in Shane. Like, I wish that they could have like done a little less to make you know, because Shane is like hateable throughout the series,
right?
And while Rachel, like, you know, certainly like has her flaws, I feel like that you don't even buy them as a couple. Like, I don't know, like, what she saw here.
It's very fair. The other shoe really drops immediately on their relationship. And I've been thinking about that. Like, if we take Rachel as written, it's like it's kind of bad on her to have gotten into this so quickly without like really having thought about what it would be like to marry. Like, it doesn't paint a picture of a very kind of thoughtful person, and but she doesn't come across as being quite, you know, capricious enough to justify that she would have married this guy. And we know that it was a quick engagement and all of that, and that she got wrapped up in these things, but like the Rachel that we see, like, seems to deserve a little bit more credit than to have gotten sort of into the situation to begin with.
Because so Nicole and Mark, like, they have their problems, but you also under like they talk about like when things were good and you know, this is like a, you know, 20, 25 year relationship that has evolved over that time. But they make such a point about the Shane and Rachel relationship. It is new that I feel like that there should be like seemingly like more of an attract. Like, it doesn't seem like that Rachel is even feeling like, oh, Shane, like, I don't even know who you are anymore. You're totally different here than you are. You know, he gets really like in a bad way about the hotel room, but you get the sense of like that this isn't that different than who Shane always has been. So I just like, felt like I never really got them as a couple.
I think it's fair for sure. It's almost like she felt, you know, they haven't even known each other a year, right? She mentions last September. And I think it's almost like she was sleeping the whole time, right? And like now she has woken up and like, oh crap, like he actually sucks. And to your point, Rob, like she absolutely, even in the first episode, she's treating him with kid gloves in the very beginning. Like she was like, really, is it a big deal though about the suite? Come on, we're having such a good time. Like she's really, really trying to calm him down because to your point, she clearly has experience with this. But I would just say I have personal experience with people being together and I'm like, absolutely not. And everybody else sees it and they're just like in La La Land, like totally, or at least one person is, you know, whoever, whichever side it is. It just doesn't see it. And, you know, there's societal pressure and, you know, clearly I can't, you know, speak from marriage experience, but I think there's something to trying and hoping that the thing that you have could grow to be better. It's a misguided thought. You know, certainly you don't want to be able to, you don't want to go into a marriage being like, I can change this person. But, you know, I think it's realistic and it's not, I guess.
Yeah. It feels like it had a momentum to it, probably, that Rachel got swept up in. But again, it's like, you know, this is really like the honeymoon is no honeymoon. So that does not bode well.
Because I think there would be, you know, a certain, you know, type of woman that would be, you know, attracted to everything that Shane has to offer. But I feel like that Rachel's character, like as we get to know her in the series, does not seem like that she is like especially interested in like all of the trappings of like being with Shane.
Yeah.
Like she's the one like, you know, the room is fine. Like it doesn't need to be a better room. You know, she doesn't seem like super motivated by money or, you know, any sort of like, you know, objects or anything like that. So like to me, I just never really saw it from Rachel's perspective.
Rachel's going to see Nicole and approach her poolside. This is a really, really interesting conversation that these two characters have. Rachel is, you know, going to say like, okay, I recognize you. You know, I admire you, which Nicole finds really flattering. And she confides that she's been having this career crisis. And these two women have this really interesting conversation where Nicole's going to give her this advice about, like, first of all, she's very savvy to say, like, did you sign a prenup? Like, Nicole, Nicole knows how these things go, and that, you know, that whatever this agreement is, you know, Rachel wouldn't be set for life if the marriage ends. So she encourages Rachel to keep her career, keep her orbit. Your power is your independence. Don't give up your power. And this is like music to Rachel's ears. She like loves this advice, and she's going to like admit that, you know, she's going to tell the Nicole that she recognizes her because she did wrote a profile on her. And that is when Ariel things take a turn.
It's not great. But real quick before that, was this triggering for you, Dr. Amanda, that they were talking about space as someone who
the orbit? I was going to say, like, anytime space comes up, I get very upset. Like, become a moon to its planet. The moon is bad. Haven't you people watched For All Mankind? Don't go to the moon.
Yes. I mean, I hope that you have never been described as a Machiavellian Gorgon. But yes, apparently this article that Rachel wrote, that in her mind, Nicole would have no idea, or, you know, it wouldn't even be on her radar. She remembers it very well because it was a hatchet job. And she, you know, apparently made her sound, in Nicole's opinion, as if she rode like the Me Too wave to kind of skip over other men, ostensibly, and, you know, betrayed women. And she doesn't like that.
So when I first watched this episode, that this scene just really resonated to me. And now let me couch what I'm saying. In no way, shape or form do I think that my own experience with Mike White had anything to do with the writing of this moment in the show. But to me, I really related to Rachel, who... Then when, you know, here's Nicole. Nicole has all these things going on in her world. When Nicole learns that Rachel had written about her, where I think Rachel was feeling I'm being complimentary, but maybe being fair about reporting about what Nicole has done. Nicole looked at it like, hey, where do you get off? How could you, like, do you even appreciate anything I'm doing? Like, why did you write this terrible hatchet job? And Rachel feels like, no, I thought it was flattering. I thought I said good things about you. Like, no, you didn't.
No, it's so great, Rob, to have you on to talk about this scene, because this was one of those scenes where I was like, this is Mike White's writing being so smart and specific, because like you can tell that this is like drawn from like that this just felt like it had so many pieces of realism here, like acknowledging the realities of like Rachel is just this freelance journalist. She has to turn out these articles. She finds these things. She says things to her. They're neither flattering or insulting. She's reporting on something. She cited somebody else. Like, she has all of this, like, she's doing her job and she thinks that Nicole is great. She doesn't have any ill feelings about Nicole, but Nicole as a human being,
she respects her.
Yeah, exactly. And Nicole as a separate human being with her own insecurities and image to worry about and the, you know, the things that she's dealing with in her life, she can read that's seemingly, you know, innocuous to Rachel, and it hits her in a completely different way. And like the specific details that Mike threw in here, I thought were great. Like the thing about, like, you know, that, you know, riding there's so many details here where you realize, okay, well, this is actually what Nicole's life is like and what her job is like. And he gets it across and like just a couple of lines, you know, she rode the Me Too wave. You didn't have to make me out like a Machiavellian Gorgon. That's the kind of thing that hurts me. So, I mean, this exchange was so fascinating because there's these two women at different stages in their life sort of joining about their joint struggles and navigating all of that. And then it immediately turns when they realize that they have had this kind of professional intersection in the past.
And it's also just hilarious because Rachel, the way she approaches her, she's so deferential. She's like, please, you know, I don't mean to, you know, bother you. I hope you're not too busy. I would just like to talk to you for a second. And she asks if she can sit down and she's on her way out and she's about to have like, this would have been best case scenario as far as the conversation. And then once Nicole asks her about herself, I think it's really interesting that she doesn't, and not that you would, but I think metaphorically, she doesn't ask to sit back down. She just sits back down. And now she's like, oh, I can kind of open up a little bit and be more myself. And that's what gets her in trouble. Like,
she thinks Nicole is going to love this. Like, yeah, oh, I wrote this piece about you, about how you're kicking the corporate world's ass.
And she didn't even write it. She recycled it. So that's like, honestly, I'm with Nicole, certainly as far as if you put your name on something, even if it was a recycle, you should know exactly what's in it and the content. And if you agree with it or not, that's like just journalism 101 to me as someone who's not a journalist.
Well, watch out, Ariel. Somebody might listen to this podcast and have a problem with something that we've said. So be careful what
these are my opinions.
Be careful what you wish
recycle
for.
Any takes.
Yeah. So that I thought was just a really highlight scene of the episode for me as well. Now, back at dinner, we show up back at dinner, and this is where Rachel is going to tell Shane that she's taking the job, and Shane is now very, very unhappy. He tells her it's rude. He accuses her of ruining the honeymoon. So Shane is, and then this is where he offers to double whatever they're paying for.
Yeah, what does that look like?
What is he gonna like Venmo her? Like, is he gonna like buy her?
Oh, yeah, aren't they married? They're married, right? Like, they
And also, it's just rude is the word of all the words that he could possibly use. That's kind of rude.
It's like,
hurtful, not that's disrespectful to me, not I feel a certain way. That's rude. Like, what are you talking about?
I will say, what is it? Hover RV at Burning Man does sound like a very stupid thing to write an article about. Like, I don't think that's going to be what makes or breaks her career.
It was a get out the vote campaign, Rob. It was for good.
I guess so.
They got 80,000 teenagers to vote.
I mean, do you think I don't think
they
got.
I don't think they got a pollen and
no, no. Yeah.
Was this in 2020?
Ooh, rock the vote. I don't know.
Yeah, but there's not a COVID world. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? You know, this is going to culminate with back in the hotel room. Rachel eventually turns down the job and she's like clearly not happy about this. But you know, again, this was Shane's orbit is more powerful than hers. So she got swept in. The other thing that's happening throughout this episode in their storyline is the evolving saga of the pineapple room that we can just note quickly. Shane's found out now that they actually, you know, the room will be empty a day early. So he's going to kind of back and forth with Armand about that. And I love the point where he, you know, sort of realizes that, you know, that Armand just doesn't want him in the room because he probably thinks I'm an asshole. And Rachel's like, well, Were you an asshole?
Were you an asshole?
He's like, well, so funny. He's like, I specifically tried not to be an asshole, but you failed.
But you failed. It's like a double whammy from Rachel. She has so much experience, as we said before, with him being an asshole. This is not surprising. And I'm honestly shocked. I'm not shocked. Shane is so unaware of himself. Earlier in the episode, when he offers her money, she's like, oh, wow, that's so generous of you. Clearly being sarcastic, and he doesn't even realize. It goes right over his head. And then here it's like, you know, the same thing basically happens. She's speaking and he's not really hearing what she's actually saying.
The only thing I can say about Shane that in the slightest defense of Shane ever is that I know personally there have been times where, you know, I feel like I have paid for something and then did not get the thing, whether even on like dumb things like you order from a DoorDash, mm-hmm. and it's like you paid for something and then like it wasn't there, mm-hmm. and it is like a very frustrating feeling to, you know, have they're screwing us, we're getting screwed, and it is like a feeling that you can really, you know, even though it's a very dumb thing, mm-hmm. it can preoccupy. Now, for Shane, now he's not even paying for it. His mom mm-hmm. is paying for it. So I don't understand why he's so fixated, especially when his mom is not on a fixed income.
No.
Why mm-hmm. he's so hell-bent on that, like refunding the difference of the room that his mom paid for, she should get the money back. Like, it's not even his money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, like, you know, to be fair, like, Armand is also in the wrong here, right? It's like, mm-hmm. Armand knows that he made a mistake, right? He, like, very quickly says, like, oops, I did double book the rooms. And then he does lie to Shane, like, about when the room is available. So Shane like feels like he's being disrespected and screwed with by the hotel, and he's right, and he's angry about that. So it's kind of like the Big Lebowski, Walter, you're not wrong, you're just an asshole. And that's like mm-hmm. really the energy that Shane is bringing. It's like, yes, they did pay for the other room, they're not in the room, it's actually not a big deal. But you do feel like maybe if he approached Armand with like more of a sense of like respect and, you know, and courtesy, that maybe this mm-hmm. could have gone in a different direction. Armand is, you know, we'll get to like, Armand is not really justified. I think we get the impression, like you said, Rob, like, do we think Armand is running the greatest resort in Hawaii? Like, he seems like he's just not at his best right now, right? Armand is like going through a time. Like, I wonder if like we think that this is characteristic of him, like the way he interacts with Shane, or if this was just like the last straw.
I think it's like what I see with Armand is he's coasting. Like, I think someone like Armand isn't going to get hired if he had been acting like this since the beginning. I think that's a hard thing to hide. But I think he's jaded. He's, to your point a little, Dr. Amanda, he's been going through it. He's kind of just over it. He's over treating these people, as he said, like they're babies, and he's like the mean mommy, and they have all this privilege and all this money. I love that he gets so many digs in at Shane. He's like, oh, an email from your mother. Like, it's so subtle, but he's basically openly insulting him. And that's not okay. Like, we know that regardless of how Armand is feeling, like, he shouldn't be openly hostile to guests, basically. Mm-hmm. It is as enjoyable as it is to watch and, you know, to him do it to Shane.
Yeah, we're going to learn in this episode from a conversation with Belinda that Armand is, you know, 5 years sober at this point. So he is in recovery. Like, we know that what happened with Lonnie really had an effect on him, that he was kind of like so oblivious that this person that he was training was in labor all day.
And to that point, like, I think it backs up what I said about he wasn't always like this, because I think it is he's looking at himself now being like, when did I become this person that didn't even notice that this woman was pregnant? And it's affecting him. Like, he feels gross about it, obviously, thank God. And it's just like it's kind of sad to watch him basically start to unravel here.
Well, he gets asked at one point if the baby was okay, and he responds by saying, like, well, I think we would have heard something. Yeah. The baby died.
Yeah, he's he doesn't even when Belinda asks how Lonnie's doing, he's like, who's Lonnie? Like, he's really sort of out of it. And this episode is going to culminate, and I didn't realize this happened as soon as episode two. So, like, obviously the backpack full of drugs ends up in Armand's office, brought to him by none other than another Survivor alumnus, Alec Merlino. What did you think of Alec Merlino's acting chops in this episode, Rob?
Oh, yeah. He's fine.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Ariel? I'm seeing you have a reaction.
This isn't it. It's my thing. Like, specifically, and the part that I laughed at was, like, he comes in, gives him the bag, and then he's like, he's kind of standing there, and Armand asks him, anything else? And he's like, nope. And he just walks away. Like, it's so sudden and random. It just feels like he's the person standing there, the actor, and not like the character. But it was nice to see him.
He is not the, like, a hotel bellhop type that gets the most screen time the episode. His name is Hutch. Like, I think he more looks the part than, like, he sent his reel in. Like, he must be a fun guy to hang out with. I think that was it.
Yeah.
With all due respect to Alec, and I really don't know a lot about his other acting. He doesn't have any other acting credits besides this and Survivor. So. Yeah, I think he was just like a fun guy to have around and like look the part.
Well,
yeah.
Good for him for booking his role.
Right, and to that point, I totally appreciate bringing your friend to work. Mm-hmm. Basically, like I love that. I'm all for that. So I hope he had fun. And this is all. I mean, this is all, to your point, Rob. This is all we have to judge him on. So hopefully, he has more success after this.
Mm-hmm.
When I had remembered like that this backpack sort of existed as a temptation for Armand for a little bit longer, but it's really in the first episode that it's introduced that Armand is actually going to go in and take a handful of pills. So we see a man kind of teetering on the edge, and then this is going to be the thing that pushes him over and breaks his, you know, 5 years of sobriety.
Yeah. And, you know, you'll go on to talk about in future episodes what that looks like. But like, it's such a fun ride with Armand. I sure love Armand. My favorite character in the show. He was so good. I'm so happy he was recognized for the great job through the whole show. That he is the star of the series so much for me. And just... loved Armand so much.
Murray Bartlett is about to earn his best supporting actor role in the Emmy in the ensuing episode. So this will be fun to watch. As always, we've saved one of our favorites for last. Our other Emmy Award winner, Jennifer Coolidge, as Tanya. And we, you know, Tanya, she wakes up and she's being born into a new day, Ariel.
She's got it. She's I just love overall, like, the beginning of this episode that they're all waking up. Like, that was very relatable. Like, the day after you arrive, whether the day before or the night before or whatever, and that first morning is just so sweet and pleasant, and the air is different. And to like actually wake up in the new place is very satisfying.
Yes. And Ariel, Tanya, and that is contrasted with seeing the people showing up for work at the resort and having a very different, like, you see kind of Belinda coming another day of this, and like people and
elevator. Like, everyone else is sitting by their open door balconies next to their beds. Yeah. And she's on this dark, probably damp and disgusting elevator.
I was wondering if her severance chip was gonna click on the elevator.
But yes, her spa chip is about to go on.
Yes,
I was gonna say, Amanda, I see so much like Adam Scott shilling the iPhone 14. Is he in the commercials with like Who's he in the commercials with? I was gonna say it's not Aubrey Plaza. It is I believe
who will
it
be
is,
on the White Lotus.
Yeah, well, yes, I think that I believe it's an SNL alum, and they are doing a lot of commercials
a la Molly Shannon.
Yes, yeah. Yes, not for Lending Tree. That's right, different. Right.
I have not seen these
as you said, Rob, we don't watch a lot of commercials.
Not a Post Show Recaps.
And they're talking about how like, hey, I get Apple TV Plus on my iPhone 14, and he's got like a Severance like queued up and ready to go, like he's gonna watch it.
He's gonna see that commercial and be like, I don't remember filming that.
Well, maybe he should be like on the Apple iPhone 14, like, hey, I wonder if there's any podcasts about this show.
I'll go slide into his DMs and suggest that. I'll definitely watch this commercial because I'm an Adam Scott completist, so maybe I'll have to get an iPhone.
He's the 14. Face of Apple iPhone 14.
Wow. Okay.
Uh-huh. Imagine all the sold. Phones just came I'm with sold. Like his face on it. Like his face is either the back or front of the phone. That'd be
So Tanya is back in the spa, back getting a massage from Belinda, and like she's just kind of like murmuring to herself, "You're just so good at this."
Mm-hmm. She's definitely enjoying it. She's getting the full massage that she didn't get last episode, and her 90-minute session, which woof to Belinda's hands.
Oh, God.
Her 90-minute session felt like 10. Probably not for Belinda.
No, probably, yeah, probably felt like the full 90 minutes, if not more. She's going to tell Belinda that she had a dream that she was on the top of this beautiful mountain range in Asia.
And with you like, so far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. And I had a cyanide pill.
Oh, no. This is where she lost me. I have never had one in my hand, luckily, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I want to believe that I wouldn't have one on the mountain. I don't know.
Rob, are you somebody who enjoys a massage?
I thought you were going to say cyanide.
either one. You can answer either. Yeah.
So yeah, that I heard in last week's episode, you two were talking about it. No, not really. I'm not a massage guy. I really don't super enjoy it. I am wondering, is it rude to fall asleep during the massage?
I don't know.
It feels like maybe it's kind of a waste of your money, right? Like if you pay for a massage and you just like fall asleep.
Right.
Because on the one hand, like I sort of think about it like two ways where it's like, oh, you know, this is relaxing. Like, well, once you've gone to sleep, I've done my job. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've relaxed you to the point you're now sleeping on the table. I feel like I can stop. But like if you're sort of like an athlete that has like an injury that needs mm-hmm. to be like worked out, like, okay, mm-hmm. I have like this hamstring tightness. Yeah. Like, I guess I could fall asleep and you can keep going. But
Tanya McQuad is definitely an athlete. Of
I feel like if you were a masseuse, you might, depending on the client, prefer to.
Yeah, because then I would just like, then I just like kind of stand there.
Mail it in.
Like,
no, they're professionals. I'm channeling my inner Phoebe Buffay or Josiah, friend around here. You know, you take pride in your work, I would hope. But yeah, maybe if like they're super, super chatty, you're like, yes, I fell asleep. I can just work in silence.
Yeah.
Or listen maybe to like Justin Timberlake in one of my AirPods.
Well, we learned from Tanya that Belinda really knows what she's doing, unlike other people who just lie you down and get you all lubricated.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe just none of us have had the right kind of massage.
It's just like everything else. It's about chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
The big plot point here with Tanya and Belinda is, you know, Tanya is so taken with Belinda that she wants to invite her to have dinner with her. And we already know that this is, you know, we know that the ethos of the White Lotus is that you can't be too specific as a presence, that this kind of self-disclosure and fraternization with the guests is discouraged. So first Belinda is going to sort of decline politely that it's frowned upon, and Tanya is outraged about this. Like, who do I have to talk to? Is this some kind of caste system?
What? She's like, some kind of caste system? I nearly fell out of my chair.
Dinner?
And it's so to the point that we've made before about like privilege. It's so out of this world for her to even understand why this would be an issue. Like, what do you mean? I will talk to someone because I'm going to get my way because I always get my way and I'm going to throw my money around.
Yeah. And like, obviously, you know, we're going to see at dinner that like Belinda does seem to warm up to Tanya, but like, do we think Belinda wants to have dinner with Tanya here? This is a very awkward situation. Like, this is a patron of the hotel. She's been paying Belinda for her services.
Not here where she's wearing her uniform.
Rather. Yeah.
Like, I think go change, but also she's like, I want to get this over with. Like, I'm exhausted. I want to go home. Let me just go have this dinner and go. It sucks for her. It sucks for her that she's kind of forced to do this because she's like, all right, I'll talk to Armand. I guess it'll be okay. But she doesn't really ever ask Belinda if she wants to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So, you know, she's going to get permission. She's going to show up. My shift ends at 7. Okay, a couple minutes after 7 then. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Give her
perfect.
A minute. Is that enough time, Rob? Like, give her like 15 minutes. Give her 20 minutes.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, she probably just wants to go home anyway. So it's like, all right, fine. Right. You know, it's not like she's going to go like change into like a different, like something more comfortable. She doesn't have another outfit with her.
Mm-hmm. Right. Can we just order? Right. Because it's not like she had dinner. She didn't have plans.
Well, you need a change of clothes in case you get like tuna fish on your shirt.
Tuna mustard. Because you have to be presentable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe she's the plan is, I think the move is stick to apps. Like, okay, we're only, you know, stick to salad, mm-hmm. something she can like eat quick and is messy, and let's just move on.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Belinda will join Tanya for dinner and they're talking, you know, and Tanya has so much respect for what Belinda does. And, you know, Belinda does genuinely appreciate getting this positive feedback and this recognition. And she shares that, like, she struggles with her job. She doesn't know if she's making a difference because the clientele here is rich white people. She's going to say, you know, I think that there's a purpose in helping even rich people, helping them to find healing, to be more present, more aware, because rich people are the ones that are fucking up the world. And Tanya, she gets it, man, because she's like, yeah, I know a lot of rich, white, fucked up people. They could use you.
She's so quick to exclude herself from the group. Very, very Tanya to not be aware of herself here. But she's like, I would fund that. Like, have you ever thought about opening your own business? And Belinda has the very honest response of like, oh, please. Like, how would I even start that? Like, where am I even going to get the money for that? That's not even something that's possible to me because Belinda lives in the real world.
Yeah, I really like that in this conversation we get like Belinda's perspective about how she relates to her job, because like working in the spa and we saw the treatment she did with Tanya, she like obviously has some spiritual connection and believes in like helping people find peace and healing, but she's going to talk about like who are these people, who is actually having access to what I'm doing, you know, is this really for any great purpose or am I just like helping these privileged people kind of escape the realities of their world when they're the people that should be, you know, engaging in the world in a more beneficial way. So I like that we get to see Belinda's struggles with that here. What did you think about that, Rob?
Yeah, I just think the saga with Belinda and Tanya is, you know, so interesting over the course of the series. You know, I don't want to spoil ahead to what's going on, but I think it raises like some interesting questions of, you know, so Tanya, like, it starts off like, you know, her heart is in the right place of like, okay, you know, I'm deciding that, okay, this is what I want to do. Okay, this makes me feel, this again is scratching that itch for her of like, how do I, you know, feel something? Oh, okay, well, maybe one of the ways I can feel something is I'm going to help this person accomplish something that they want to do. Mm-hmm. But sometimes these feelings are fleeting. And so if you don't have the sort of like, if you don't have the core motivation to keep that going, are you actually, is your heart actually in the right place, or are you just trying to again, like chase that feeling of like some sort of like temporary fulfillment.
Right.
Yeah. And I think to that point, there's something that comes up in the inside the episode right after this, mm-hmm. where Jennifer Coolidge is speaking and she self-identifies her character, Tanya, as someone who has ADHD. Now, I don't remember. It hasn't come up in the show before this. I don't remember if they go into mm-hmm. it in the show. It kind of seems to me like that was a note that she was given by, you know, like Mike White, like, you know, in the writing of like, this is how you play it. And to your point, Rob, it totally tracks of like the way she's like, oh, this is the new thing that I'm paying attention to. And I feel it really deeply. And, you know, it's like it doesn't take away from her intention necessarily why it's happening. But it does, you know, it's interesting to think about in that context and how she doesn't really see things. She's already not really seeing things in a certain way because of her money. And then now she's not really fully understanding the effect she could have on someone by
right.
like, promising this thing.
And in this, like, in this very moment, in this very interaction, she's going to like dangle in front of Belinda the prospect that I'll fund a business for you. You can like have your own business mm-hmm. and escape being in the service industry. And immediately is distracted by looking over at the Mossbergers' tables and complimenting them on how beautiful their family is. So it's like, mm-hmm. it's clear, like, at this moment that she doesn't get, like, the weight and how much mm-hmm. it would mean to Belinda to, like, have this life-changing experience. Right. Like, for her, it's just like, it would feel good for me to say this in the moment, and now I'm already on to something else.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and to go back to, you know, something that you two have talked a lot about, like sort of like the upstairs, downstairs of like life at the White Lotus, we see from a lot of the characters who are sort of like the people that are working at the resort, you know, they are sort of like very close to, you know, these people with a lot of like disposable income that like mm-hmm. That people of means and that they sort of like at times like are like kind of like dangle like, oh, like we could work together. Like we could like it's almost like that there's like this for Belinda, like it's sort of like dangled in front of her like, hey, a way out of like this. This is kind of to fulfill you. And like, you know, the thing that you've always wanted to do, like, yeah, I can make that happen. Oh, but mm-hmm. also what's this over here? Oh,
yeah.
Okay, right.
Wait, no, hold on. No. What were we saying about the thing? right. And, you know, and Belinda is like sort of like she doesn't want to be rude about it. She doesn't want to come off as like overplaying her hand because it's like, okay, well now if I offend Tanya, it's all over. But mm-hmm. it's also sort of like she's very much like held hostage to Tanya's whims, mm-hmm. which are all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Belinda gets into Natasha Rothwell got into that again, also in inside the episode of like the transactional nature of like that's the only way that Tanya or other people like her can show their appreciation because they don't know any other way. It's like, OK, let me just tip you $200 while you're on the phone because I'm trying to get you attention. I'm trying to get your attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that it feeds into the theme of like, you know, what are these characters looking for? Like these vacationers, like going to this place and trying to have this experience, trying to find something authentic that is going to be meaningful to him, trying to find some sense of healing. And it's like they're trying to do that, but the context of it is completely transactional, right? So like how much is that manufactured? Can you get that real feeling that we see Quinn sort of capture on the beach, looking at the whales play in the ocean, when it's really all, you know, something that's bought and paid for and relies on other people's labor and, you know, that sort of relationship. So I love when the show really tackles those themes head on.
Yeah, it's super effective. I gotta say, I remembered it very fondly, but like I've been impressed with how like razor sharp these every piece of it is from the get on this rewatch.
Yeah, you remembered most of it very fondly, and then there's a part that you forgot entirely. And I can't wait. We'll get there, and it'll be a big, big surprise. So that is episode 2 of The White Lotus, A New Day. Any other thoughts on The White Lotus or looking ahead to season 2 that you have, Rob? We're going to be in Sicily. We're going to have Jennifer Coolidge back. And other than that, it's going to be an all new cast.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I thought that this was just such a fun ride the first time through. I think that what had happened was that Nicole and I were like, we were a couple of weeks behind, and when I had heard like some fun buzz about it. And so we checked it out, and we really both liked it immediately, and then like got caught up by the time that the finale had happened. So we didn't get spoiled. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really fun. I'm just interested to know, like, can the second season live up to this first season, which was such like lightning in a bottle, like where that had the time to, you know, and the production crew like had the time to do this, like really like during COVID without any distraction. And then to do a second season of this, like, can they do it again? It'll be very, very interesting to see. But I love the idea of just like these 6-episode anthologies of exploring some characters for a limited amount of time, and then having like a beginning, middle, and end.
Well, we're going to be back talking about season 2. We would love for you to join us when season 2 comes out and talk about this again.
Yeah, there's a Nicole Cesternino favorite coming in season 2, Michael Imperioli.
That's right.
Yes, yes. But this is very much on her radar. She is, very excited about that. So we both enjoyed the first season, and then when she heard Michael Imperioli is going to be in it, she is thrilled.
It has to be on her little Nintendo, watching it privately, like instead of paying attention to other things.
Do you think that Nicole was in Mike White's ear about this? Has she been DMing with Mike White with casting suggestions? Yeah.
Oh man, I will be furious if she's like moonlighting, like having this friendship with Mike White, and then totally like he's like, yeah, don't tell Rob that we talk.
She's been interviewing him about Survivor.
That's probably not happening.
About Burning Man and like hovercrafts and that whole thing. Mm-hmm. But this has been super fun. Thank you so much for coming on, Rob. You have any like websites or
anything
podcasts
else going
that you run
on
that you might?
Yeah, all the reality TV stuff. September is a crazy month for the CBS reality shows, especially between the finales of The Challenge, Big Brother is winding down, and then Survivor and The Amazing Race are about to kick off a new season. So it's a really crazy September. But if reality TV is not your thing, every week on Nothing But Netflix, Chappelle and I cover a different topic over on that. And this weekend, we're going to be talking about the Queen Latifah and Ludacris film, End of the Road.
I'm hearing good things on Twitter.
Yes. So the fun thing about the Nothing But Netflix is sometimes we talk about things that are good, and sometimes we talk about things that are bad, but we try to have fun either way. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a super fun time over there. What about you, Dr. Amanda? What have you got going on?
Well, you should follow me on Twitter, where I'm at Dr. Amanda R. I just got to talk with Josh and LaTanya on the Versus podcast, comparing House of the Dragon episode 4 with Game of Thrones episode 4. That was a lot of fun. So if you're following House of the Dragon, definitely check that out. And then subscribe to our podcast feed if you like this podcast that you've just listened to. That's postshowrecaps.com/White Lotus. Give us your star ratings. Hopefully this is a 5-star podcast and not a 4-star, like the rating Rob gave to the White
Lotus.
Is
Josh Wiggler like the Armand of Post Show Recaps?
We'll have to ask him when he comes and stays with us.
Hopefully in only all the good ways. He's like, oh, really? I got an email from your mother about your podcast.
I'd like to file a complaint that I thought this podcast, like, oh, okay, let me get on that.
I do think he fields some of those types of complaints.
And then I heard 2 ads for the same thing right after each other. And I don't mind the ad in the podcast, but then do I have to, can there be different ads? Why is it the same one? It's a two times in a row. It wasn't even for something that I want. Like I don't mind an ad if it relates to me, but it was for a product that I don't even use.
some people do not like the double ads. And to them, I would say, you should subscribe and be a patron of Posho Recaps.
Oh, that's a great idea, Ariel.
To the ad-free Posho Recaps podcast feed, including patron-only exclusives. And there's a Doctor Who rewatch going on that I was not aware of. And the Matt Smith of it all with, you know, House of the Dragon going on. So yeah, just something to consider. You know, you should support the arts if you can. And yeah, so I am on Twitter at That Other Ariel. I am also covering movies every week here on Posho Recaps with friend of every single pod, Grace Leader. That's always super fun. And subscribe, as Dr. Amanda said. And we'll be here every week. HBO's vague scheduling be damned until we get a season 2 announcement, which I'm sure is imminent. But until next time, we'll be back with episode 3 of season 1. But ta-ta for now.
Aloha!
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.